Chapter 3. The Path of Self-Surrender. The good is exclusively in God, or rather, God is the good in all eternity. That is why the good is necessarily the cause and essence of all motion and of all genesis. Nothing exists that is without the good. The good, in perfect equilibrium, is surrounded by a static force of manifestation. It is the entire plenitude, the primordial fount, the origin of all things. When one calls that which sustains everything good, I mean the good, which is absolute and eternal. This attribute belongs only to God, for there is nothing he lacks, so that no desire for possession can make him evil. There is nothing he might lose, and at the toss of which he might be grieved, because sorrow and grief are part of evil. There is nothing stronger than he that might be able to wage war against him, nor is it in keeping with his nature that indignity might be brought upon him. Nothing excels him in beauty and thus arouses him to the love of the senses. Nothing can deny him obedience and thus move him to anger. There is nothing wiser than he which could thus arouse his covetousness. Let us take a closer look at these words from the 10th book of Hermes. They show that in Hermetic philosophy, the concept of God proceeds from the certainty that there is one autonomous, immutable Godhead. They also make us realize how much the Hermetic teachings have filtered into the doctrines of virtually all major religious groups, despite all the distortions people have made of them. Imagine for a moment the seven cosmic domains which are not situated one underneath the other or one beside the other, but concentrically one within the other. This whole system of creation, this creative plenitude of the seven cosmic domains with its motion and its activity, is not the Godhead but finds its foundation and essence in the Godhead. God, the unknowable, the good, is surrounded by a static power of manifestation, which is the primordial fount, the origin of all things. The good, which is absolute and eternal and sustains everything, is an attribute of God alone. There is nothing he lacks, he is everything in himself. From this one, unknowable being emanates a mighty, all-fulfilling radiation. Through this mighty radiation of the one Godhead, which fills the entire all, and so is omnipresent, everything has been created and is kept in existence. So on the one hand, there is God, the only good, and on the other hand, creation and creatures in a boundless complexity. If you can hold on to this as an idea, as a starting point for an attitude to life, if you can reach an understanding of all this, you will at some point be moved to ask why Hermes told all this to Asclepius. Was it intended to be a lesson in dogma? No, Asclepius had to become a healer, a priestly human being, so he first had to heal himself, obviously. Asclepius had to ascend to his highest goal as a creature, a goal which lay exclusively in the only good. But at that moment, Asclepius still finds himself faced with the boundless complexity of creation and its creatures. After all, there are millions who, strictly speaking, are our fellow creatures. And among all these companions of race and fate, there are many who take a certain standpoint with respect to others. Think of the many authorities to be found in the world who say to you, "This is what we say, listen to us. We know all about it, we can do it. Take such and such a course, this is what you must do." Indeed, there have often been times in which those in authority have exercised compulsion, posing a threat to life and liberty. The brothers and sisters of the tri-unity of the light, of Grail, Cathar, and Cross with roses, could tell a tale about that. Today, too, there are again developments which practice coercion of the conscience, in small things as well as in major issues. In many fields of life, with all kinds of motives, coercion of the conscience is flourishing anew. Tyranny is exercised by families, for instance, and in many countries, by groups. We are also thinking, here, of the inhabitants of the reflection sphere and the life waves which populate the etheric domain of those who dwell on other planets and of the Aeons and the Archons of the Aeons. Among them are those who have become extremely powerful as creatures and who glorify themselves with the names of gods or are awarded such names by others. There are also the hordes of perpetrators of the great game. In short, there are myriads of creatures with myriads of possibilities for betrayal, deception, and coercion. And all of them are telling you, we possess the good. And now consider Asclepius, the seeker in the ocean of life, as a creature among fellow creatures. It is as if he has been submerged and is being tossed to and fro by the waves. Most of our readers, too, have been genuine seekers since their youth. You have been searching everywhere, haven't you? And think of all the vast quantities of literature you have devoured. And isn't it true to say that it was as if by coincidence, through a combination of circumstances beyond your control, that you came into contact with the spiritual school of the Golden Rosy Cross? What should Asclepius do amid the fire of his seeking? Where should he go? What is being done to him? Where are the tides of life driving him? Thousands of voices ring in his ears. The good is here. What will become of him? For in the totality of creation, evil takes many forms. That is why the observation is made in the 10th book of Hermes that what is considered good here, in the world of dialectics, is at best the smallest part of evil. Who could distinguish the truth among all those wraith-like forms, among all those shadowy notions which present themselves to us? Who is able to see through all that pretense, all that delusion, all that nefariousness? How could one possibly make sense of all that immeasurable chaos? Who could remain standing in the midst of these wildly proliferating dangers? Surely it just not possible. Yes, it is possible. The contents of the 10th book of Hermes are intended to help you in this, since they are directed to the person who wishes to become an Asclepius. The fact that the only good is autonomous, the fact that the only good and its mighty radiation are completely separate from all created things, the fact that the only good does not share the delusive nature of creation in any way whatever, the fact that the only good is unique in its absolute eternal purity, and that nevertheless the Godhead irradiates the whole of creation, the whole of chaos with its mighty light, and no place can be found where it is not present. That, and that alone, enables the seeker, Asclepius, to remain himself and find his way through the labyrinth. We have already given you the necessary directions. If you wish to become a priestess or a priest of the Gnosis, if you want to be an Asclepius, a healer of mankind, do not be attached to anything, neither by love nor especially by hate. Be purely objective, well disposed to the last, but not attached. Do not listen to any voice, any impulse, any suggestion. Our words, too, you should not accept a priori as true. Be of goodwill and remain unbiased until from within you discover something of the truth. We repeat, do not listen to any voice. Do not pursue the fleeting urges of your sensory organism. Stand without conceit as an autonomous creature amid the all manifestation. But at the same time, be extremely watchful. For as soon as you begin to enter into detachment, the entire host of aeons and archons will fall upon you. Many gods of creation, many entities who have achieved great power, will take an interest in you. Only in the way described was it possible for the school of the modern Rosy Cross to be born and to become what it now is by standing in non-attachment. Those who began the work of the young Gnostic spiritual school have always maintained that there is nothing good in this world. They have held this point of view right from the beginning, even though they have always been absolutely kind and correct with respect to all things. No one is good, not even one. Therefore, we stand in non-attachment. The Godhead, the mighty, all-fulfilling Godhead, can only touch us with its radiation in this state of objectivity and non-attachment. Only in this way can its radiative plenitude transmit to us in purity the message of the All. Since the very moment when we began the school, it is true to say that the entire host of aeons and archons has been attacking us mentally, etherically, verbally, and in writing. What allegations have not been made against the school and its workers? Of what have we not been accused in the course of the years? Yet, thanks be to God, we have been able to remain in a state of non-attachment in the face of all this, right until now. With this example before you, do not be anxious and let yourself be pervaded with the knowledge that however you are at this moment, you are potentially a pistis sophia. For, and that is the mystery, the all-penetrating, omnipresent rays of the only good do exist, and you can enter into a link with these rays. Nothing stands between you and these rays of the only good. No creation, no creature, no theologian, and no spiritual leader of a spiritual school. As an autonomous creature, you stand before it and it alone. It is possible to live and to exist out of the radiations of the only good. In the power of the only good, you can occupy a position of strength with respect to all phenomena in the world of creatures, and follow your road to the goal in total freedom. Now you might make the following observation. You have said yourself that one should not bind oneself to anything, so how can one connect oneself with the rays of the Seven Spirit? Wouldn't this give rise to the possibility of error? As long as you still exist in the nature-born state, you should not connect yourself with anything. If you do, you will always be victimized. For instance, if you take the point of view that I possess it, I am it, I can do it, you will be misled, day in and day out, by Athades, the power with the lion's head, just as described in the Gnostic Gospel of the Pistis Sophia, the power and the figure that imitate the being of Christ. When a theologian preaches about Jesus the Lord and about Christ, he is nothing else than a servant of the power with the lion's head. But when you enter into not being and open yourself, taking care to remain detached, you will be touched by the universal radiation of the only good, and the time will come when you know that you are linked with it. So you must not link yourself with anything as long as you remain in the nature-born state. Otherwise you will be victimized, then you will founder in the academic sea, as Johann Valentin Andrea called it. Then you will never reach the island of Kafar Salama, the land of peace. That is why the process of Gnostic pupilship includes a phase of preparation for union with the only good, a phase of devoting oneself, in autonomy, to the rose of the heart. If you dedicate yourself to the rose of the heart, accepting all the consequences and laws involved with it, you will be devoting yourself to the autonomous self-par excellence. This means, firstly, that you will make yourself, with the seat of the eye, with the head sanctuary in its nature-born state, subordinate to the heart sanctuary in order to bring the soul, your immortal soul, to life. In the modern spiritual school, we call this devotion of the head to the heart, self-surrender. And when, as a result, the soul comes to life, the heart begins to dedicate itself to the head. For when the heart is able to open itself to the light of the gnosis and is filled with it, the breakthrough via the heart to the head sanctuary will be celebrated and evacuate everything that does not belong there. And then, while the autonomous self controls the entire intelligence and sensory perception, the radiative plenitude of the spirit will manifest itself in the head sanctuary. So the aim of self-surrender is to open the head sanctuary for Pimanda, for the radiative fullness of the only good, and you can only put self-surrender into practice through non-attachment. In this way, via the road from Bethlehem to Golgotha, the spirit takes up its position on the throne of the autonomous self. Then you will have reached your goal. Then you will have traversed the sea of folly. Then you will have reached the other shore.
Now, though, you may well have another question of a practical nature. When I deliberately avoid either hating or loving and enter into that so important state of negation, will I not be running the risk of ignoring the true children of God? Surely there are many who have walked the path to the only good, or who are
engaged in doing so. Surely we shouldn't have the idea that we need have nothing to do with anything or anyone else, and that we ourselves are the best. Thanks be to God, this world is undoubtedly inhabited by many of his children. But it is out of the question that you could fail to recognize them. If you are reborn as to the soul, if this process is already active within you, in your heart and in your head, you cannot possibly be mistaken about such things. From the moment when you are soul bomb, you enter into unity with every other reborn soul. Wherever in the world they may be and whatever the circumstances, you will recognize these brothers and sisters. A soul community does not need to be formed, it is. You only need to enter it by bringing the rose to bloom. We sometimes hear someone in the school say, "It is so difficult for me to live in group unity," to enter into group unity as it is meant by the school. Such observations are in fact rather foolish. To say such a thing proves that one is not yet soul-born. If you are soul-bomb, if one tiny spark of the new soul state is present in you, you will no longer find unity a problem. You will even find that you are unable to resist entering into the group. Each soul is one with every other soul, existentially and absolutely. That is the splendor of the great soul community. So when, in the young gnosis, it had become possible to concentrate sufficient new soul power, a link with the great soul community of the universal Gnostic chain immediately came into being. We did not seek this link, we did not ask for it. No letters were exchanged on the subject, we simply met each other. And many brothers and sisters were witness to this. A soul community does not need to be formed, it is. So follow the path. For the rest, bear in mind the familiar warnings in the holy language. Be faithful, but trust no one. Do not believe in every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are from God, says John. These two pieces of advice are very hermetic. If you follow them, no harm will come to you. If you do not, grief and pain will assail you and go on assailing you, for grief and pain are part of evil.